The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
You're very welcome along to the Paddy Power Half Hour. Over the next half hour, we're going to look ahead to the weekend's action. Joined in studio by Raf Diallo and Nicole. Before we get into it, only one place to start, lads. Unai Emery sacked 10:10 this morning, just over 12 hours after they lost to Eintracht Frankfurt. Worst run since 1992 for the club. 7 games without a win. Watching the last 10, 15 minutes of that game, Raf, last night, it was inevitable that Emery was going to be sacked. Arsenal looked like they didn't really care if they didn't score. There was no one at the game. And Emery...
Although they did claim there were 49,000 people there. Yeah. Obviously, they're adding in season ticket holders and the like in that figure. But yeah, and actually, it goes back even to the Southampton game. If you remember the very, very end of that, yeah, where Lacazette equalises... There's no celebrations. No. It's almost like they know they're prolonging the inevitable. But it's just felt, yeah, it's felt inevitable for quite some time. He chops and changes formations. I should have said good evening first before yeah, we started that, because that would have just felt fitting.
But yeah, he said it in his last interview last night.
Yeah, just in terms of their form has been horrific. There doesn't seem to be an identity to the way they play. Even at least Wenger had a certain way about him and a certain type of leadership, and even controversies like the choice of the captain, it all just plays into a sense of a rudderless club, and he was obviously the figure in charge.
Yeah, that's the problem, Enda. The club itself was Emery onto a hiding to nothing, replacing a legend like Arsene Wenger, but also taking over a bit of a mess that the likes of Aaron Ramsey are let leave the club. In this week, we've heard Aubameyang isn't going to commit to signing a new contract. There's talks that Real Madrid and Barcelona are looking at him because he's looking at the club thinking, you know, where is it going?
Yeah.
And Sanchez obviously was let go to United last season. So even getting rid of Emery, like, it's going to change certain things, but is it really going to have the big effect that they want that can get them back in challenging for Champions League places?
I don't think so. And I think it's been a bit unfair on Emery, because I remember at the time when he got the job, people were questioning the appointment at the time, saying they don't believe he had the tactical nous, firstly, to bring the club forward, and secondly, that he would have the authority to actually bring the club together after, and it was such a turbulent time as well in Arsenal's history. And if you look at the comparisons in the United and the Arsenal that the managers inherited after the Arsene Wenger and Alex Ferguson eras, Arsenal have undergone so much change in that period, between sporting directors, between players leaving the club. It's just been kind of all over the place. And I think Emery's actually done quite a good job in the last 2 years to hold the ship together. I know it hasn't been great, but at the same time, with so much change happening in the club, to still be in the position that they are, I think he's actually done a pretty good job.
Yeah, I would agree up until about 2 months ago.
He should have left during the summer. They should have said, you know what, you did a great job steadying the ship after Arsene Wenger. We changed the sporting directors. We got all these guys in the background that we wanted to get. Thanks very much. And then got a proper manager instead of letting them carry on.
Yeah, Raf, it's quite easy to even watch them knowing things aren't right. Their away form is terrible.
The away form was terrible under Wenger towards the end
absolutely.
As well. And it just continued on. And the only thing is, Emery didn't improve anything. Has he made it worse? I don't necessarily think so. Would Wenger have declined to the point?
Weeks,
yeah, in the last few weeks, yes. But I think overall, I mean, even if you look last season, they almost got Champions League football, although that was almost by default, and they bottled it towards the end. Just in terms of, I just don't know, would Wenger have maybe slipped to where they are now? Potentially, I don't know. And I don't know whether it's necessarily just Emery.
Well, the thing about getting rid of Wenger was you had a divide with the club supporters, where there was Arsenal fans that remained loyal to Wenger for what he had done, an unbelievable job. And then there was Arsenal fans that thought, yeah, he's done a great job, but we need to move on. One thing Emery has done is he has certainly, there's no division now. They were all in agreement that he has to go. The fans that turned up at the Emirates last night for the game was probably just out of a sense of the club, nothing to do with Unai Emery.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I actually do feel that Arsenal are in a better position now than they would have been had Wenger stayed on, because Wenger was holding the club back from the change that was inevitable, bringing in the likes of Mislintat, first of all. then bringing in, missed out on Monchi, but they brought in Adu then to figure out to take that role as well. And there have been loads of changes in the coaching staff as well. Freddie Ljungberg wouldn't be at the club had it not been for this change. So while the team itself isn't really in a better position on the table, I think the squad's better than it was in Arsene Wenger's last year. And I think the club structure is better than it was under Wenger in the last couple of years as well. So a good manager is coming into a pretty decent situation. All he has to do is sort out the defence, and they've got a good midfield and a very, very good forward line.
Yeah, no, and
I just wonder financially.
Yeah, that
was the issue actually in the summer, where they were able to bring in a few players, but then even the Pepe deal is structured in a way allowed them to kind of fit it in.
That was it. We were told, all summer we were told that they would have 50 million, and they were linked with Zaha, and Palace were raising the bar up to 70, and then you thought, okay, they can't get him. Then all of a sudden the Pepe deal happened, and like you said, there was structures put in place, but what was baffling was that they were able to get a Pepe deal done, but they didn't look to strengthen at the back. And that's where the problem is. But also, you know, if a new manager comes in, all these players have shown, if you watched the game last night, they did not care for the last 10, 15 minutes. So some of them have down tools. And history has shown us that if they can down tools once, they could do it again for another manager. So that's why you have to get a manager in that is strong enough. And I think Emery proved with the way he handled the whole captaincy thing. I know if the players pick Xhaka, Xhaka's obviously popular in the changing room, but anyone that has watched Xhaka since he's come to Arsenal knew that this was going to annoy the hell out of the Arsenal fans. A guy that at times you just see walking around the pitch thinking, this is the guy that's going to wear the armband. And obviously look how he reacted when came off against Palace.
Yeah, who's the first man jumps to mind when you think of a captain? Roy Keane. And the players, Gary Neville and the rest of them, have said publicly that had they been given the option of choosing a captain, it would have been Roy Keane as well. So I don't agree with the point of view that players can't pick the captain. Yes, they probably will pick the most popular player, but he's popular for a reason as well. And I know, like, looking outside of the camp looking at that, Jack is not captain material.
But he's captain Switzerland, so he's obviously got something going on.
Yeah, he has something, but at the same time, who have they got to choose from?
Exactly. Yeah. You're not going to... I thought Aubameyang was a baffling decision as well, but Arsenal have a history of weird enough captaincy.
Look at their captain at the start of the season before a ball was kicked. Lauren Koscielny refused to go on the tour.
Yeah, so, and then they had William Gallas, and they had Van Persie at a time when Van Persie was hot-headed and always getting himself booked or sent off.
Yeah, so I think at times as well, there's probably too much emphasis put on the captaincy. And it seems to be, especially in English football, that you see it even with our national team, who wears the armband almost is meant to represent what the club is all about.
And yeah.
That's why Xhaka certainly doesn't really represent what Arsenal are trying to do, because, you know, his performance hasn't been good enough. So all that aside, you think back to some of the good times Emery had at Arsenal. I think the 2-0 win they had against Spurs last season, where Alexis Sanchez was playing that day, but they played with intensity. And that was what we thought the blueprint was going to be for Arsenal going forward under Unai Emery, where, high intensity, and they were brilliant against Spurs.
Yeah, and pressing, as most of the top clubs seem to do. You know, City do it, Klopp and Liverpool did it more intensely before and maybe have scaled it back a little bit, and it looked like Arsenal were doing a little bit of that. And then it just seems to have shifted. They've gone reactive. Sometimes they're a bit more proactive, and you never know what you're going to get week in, week out. And I don't think that helps the players either.
Well, that was the biggest issue this year, is that he just couldn't figure out who to play, where to play them, what formation to play. And I was just looking at a piece that was on Sporting 365, and he played 7 formations, 50 lineup changes in 7 games. So if you go through it, against Vitória in the Europa League, he played a 4-2-3-1. The following week, he played a 4-4-2 against Crystal Palace. And then he went away to Liverpool, played 4-4-1-1, home to Wolves 4-3-1-2. Vitória, the reverse fixture 3-4-3. Leicester City 3-4-1-2, and then a 3-5-2 against Southampton at home the following week. And so he just couldn't figure out what to do with this team.
Yeah, and that's going to be the next problem for whoever takes over. Obviously, Freddie Ljungberg's in temporary charge. If you're playing three at the back, David Luiz actually fits into that system. But then you look at who's beside him. And, you know, the signs weren't really great when someone like Callum Chambers has come back into the team. But surely you look at the talent in the squad, there's certainly enough good players that I expect them to start winning more games. I'm just looking at their fixtures, and they've got, obviously, Norwich away on Sunday. They've Brighton at home, West Ham away, Man City at home, Everton away, Bournemouth away, Chelsea at home. That's all before the new year. And then on New Year's Day, they play Manchester United. So there's certainly games in there that are winnable. It'll be interesting to see what Freddie Ljungberg does in terms of team selection and formation.
Yeah, he's, as a manager, obviously, this is his first role, I guess.
Well, at least the club.
He knows the club, but at the same time, we don't really know his coaching philosophy. He's been an assistant, like, I think, at Wolfsburg before. He's worked in the Arsenal youth teams, and I don't really know what his personality is either as a manager. I kind of vaguely remember him, obviously, as a player, that would have kind of ghosted into space, but it's hard to gauge what he's like or how he's going to interact with the players themselves.
Very scary similarities with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Not just because they're Scandinavian.
Well, except for that, in the reports that I've been reading about Ljungberg throughout his career in coaching, he puts a big emphasis on bringing youth forward. He is highly respected,
yeah,
as opposed to Ole Solskjaer, who got sacked by Cardiff and was managing Molde. Like, Ljungberg seems to be very highly thought of as a coach, and he seems to have a philosophy down. We'll get to see that now at a senior level. You just hope that, for Arsenal's sake, that they don't jump the gun like Man United did and give Ljungberg the job if he goes on that inevitable manager boost run.
Yeah, but you have to think back to last week when Spurs appointed Jose Mourinho, and, you know, some of the talk since Emery's been sacked is that Arsenal were looking to bring in Jose Mourinho, which I find that bizarre given how derogatory he's been about Arsenal since he came to the Premier League.
Yeah, I think he's been more derogatory about Wenger than Arsenal, because he would use, Arsenal is a great club as a stick to beat Wenger with, because he's obviously failing was just finishing fourth with a club that should be finishing higher. So obviously, I don't think the fans will take to him, straight away, but. Yeah, I think it was more aimed at Wenger at the time anyway, more so than the club.
So what are we thinking? Who are we looking at? Like, Allegri's name has been mentioned, because if you're bringing in Freddie Ljungberg on a short-term deal or an interim deal, you got to go for somebody that's available. Like, the name that's been going around all week, even before last night's game against Frankfurt, was Nuno Espirito Santo, the Wolves manager.
But seems like an odd choice.
Well, whatever about what he's done at Wolves, is he really going to leave Wolves right now, fifth in the league?
They've just
qualified for the last 32 of the Europa League. He's got money there if he wants. He's got a good squad.
He's got the partnership with the agents as well. He's got a good link there to build that squad and continue building for the rest of the years. But I'll just bring you through some of the more recent odds on this. Allegri has jumped to favourite to be the next Arsenal manager. He's now currently 10 to 11 to be it. I think that will probably be a bit of a jump on the odds because of the links on Sky Sports, not necessarily because he is the favourite within the Arsenal board to get it. Nuno Espirito Santo, second favourite at 5-1. Mikel Arteta, 6-1. Freddie Ljungberg, 8-1. I would expect him to go down should they not appoint a proper manager until the end of the season. If Ljungberg takes it and Brent goes on that run, that'll go down. And Patrick Vieira is an outsider's bet at 20-1. Can't see him getting it. He's not doing too good in the French league.
Okay, well, our football coverage is brought to you by Paddy Power. And for more information on responsible gambling, you can visit dunlewy.net, because we will be talking about odds over the next few minutes after going through the odds there of the next manager. So, Ljungberg's in charge away to Norwich, who up until last weekend were really struggling. They get a win at Everton, but this is a nice game for Arsenal, because Norwich will play. You know that there's going to be more intensity in the Arsenal performance, and you just wouldn't be surprised if they win this game, Raf.
Yeah, there's always a new manager bounce in most cases. It's one of those kind of cliched things. And I think Norwich's victory, obviously, last week was against an Everton side that are just beleaguered. So I obviously, look, it's a good victory, but I wouldn't put too much store in it as well. And obviously, as you said, I suppose there's that kind of sense of more intensity when a new manager comes in, because there's a lot of players that will want to impress the interim manager in case they're staying on longer, or just if there's another manager kind of watching from the sidelines, they want to kind of put themselves in place. And obviously the bad feeling with Emery gone, that'll dissipate a little bit. Yeah. And I would expect a better performance, and maybe the fans actually being on side, because their fans can be a little bit fickle in the stadium as well, and they can turn very easily.
So they're all going to get behind Freddie Ljungberg. Rafa Benitez was mentioned in that. There's a manager that obviously has Premier League experience, but if you need one man to sort your defence out, it's Rafa Benitez, and he has all the attacking talent there. Now, there'd be certain players you'd wonder, would they fit into his plan in an attacking sense? But he could sort out the defence. Now, he's probably going to have to do a bit of recruitment there.
Yeah, see, I'd actually like to see Rafa take on a job like Arsenal where they do have attacking talent.
Yeah.
Because Rafa hasn't really had a big job since, I know he had the Real Madrid job for a while there, that was kind of odd, but at Liverpool, it's been almost 15 years now since he had that job. Has his philosophy changed? It probably has if he has a squad. It would be good to see an Arsenal side that's well-drilled and then see what they can do going forward as well.
Yeah.
And I would sense that Rafa might have changed his philosophy. He would be a bit more attacking than we remember.
Well, he'd have more attacking talent. Obviously, he's in China at the moment. Now, it brings us on nicely, actually, to the games at the weekend. We mentioned the Norwich-Arsenal, but Newcastle-Man City. And Rafa was in charge of Newcastle when they won this fixture last season, even though City scored in the first minute. Sergio Aguero scored that day. He's not involved tomorrow. Newcastle unbeaten in 5 home league games, Raf. But they were dour against Villa.
They were very, 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 very flat. And against what is not a great Villa side either. Obviously, Howard scored a great goal and everything else. But Newcastle have picked up a little bit, though, compared. Like, I was very worried about them at the start of the season, given Steve Bruce was more unpopular than Emery was at Arsenal coming into the campaign, and he's obviously bounced around a lot of jobs as well. Like, he's a decent manager by all accounts, but you'd think even without Aguero, City should have enough to, you know, at least beat them away from home at St James's Park. But at the same time, as I said, Newcastle have improved compared to what I'd seen them. I think the win over Tottenham, when they went away and won there, I think that kind of helped bolster them a little bit.
Yeah, but obviously they've beaten United at home as well. Any chance, Ender, they can beat City? Like, City are in this position now where they're obviously 9 points behind Liverpool, but they can strike the first blow tomorrow because Liverpool play at 3 o'clock. So nice little chance. Now, Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool will tell you they're not keeping an eye on that City game. Maybe not, but it'd be nice for City to get their work done before the rest of the games kick off.
Yeah, but imagine if City score early, then it'll be a dead rubber game from then on, and they'll just control the ball and
I remember the fixture last season. That was last January. That was their last defeat in the league last season before they went on the run to obviously win the league by a point. So I remember watching that game. You know, you settle in to watch it, and City score after a minute, and you think that's it, done. Bizarrely, they lost the game. So there's still a little bit of a vulnerability about City, where they've conceded the first goal in their last 3 league games.
Well, especially against a team like Newcastle, who are going to be very well drilled from attacking set pieces. That defence can be got at from that perspective, especially if you have a centre-half partnership of Fernandinho and or John Stones or someone else alongside him. Newcastle have been very good from their attacking set pieces. Some very good plays. Kieran Clarke's been getting on his head on a few crosses as well. So, and as well as that, Newcastle have improved in their counter attacking play. So if they can,
Sam Maximin.
Yeah, he's so quick. He's like he's a bit quick, like Adama Traore. He forgets the ball sometimes,
and too quick for his own.
He almost forgets what he's trying to do himself, and he can be quite wasteful at times. But if you're going at a team like City, who are vulnerable at the back, and you have confidence in your defence to hold that team out for 60, 70 minutes. The longer that game goes on, the more I would fancy Newcastle to get something.
Do you ever think Miguel Almirón will score for Newcastle?
I think when he does, he'll go on a run. But
I just hope it's not a consolation. You're 4-0 down and he scores. Yeah.
Didn't Jose Perez go on a similar enough run for Newcastle when he first signed for them?
Yeah, but
and he just waited and waited and waited and it finally came.
Look at him now.
It's beautiful.
Look at him now. But I remember Almiron's first home game. He started against Huddersfield and he was clear through on goal, chipped the keeper and it hit the post and went wide. And I often wonder if that had gone in, because he was lively in his first few games, but he just looks so down on confidence at the moment. But Steve Bruce keeps picking him. He eventually has to score. Tomorrow will be a good day to do it.
And I think when he does score, because he does seem to have some good elements to his game, once he does score and he gets that moment of confidence, especially if it's at St. James's Park in front of the Newcastle fans, I think it will give him kind of that boost.
I just hope it's a meaningful goal. It's not.
Yeah, that's not like the last goal in the 5-1
into the Gallagher end. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for. So that game's at 12:30. Then Liverpool at home to Brighton. We don't know. Right now, we don't know the full extent of Fabinho's injury. And as important as he is, you'd imagine Liverpool can cope without him for games against the likes of Brighton. Van Dijk obviously went down against Napoli. That would be a bigger concern. He'll be fine. But if Van Dijk was out, then Liverpool would be worried. But they have plenty of players in midfield that can step in there, Raf.
Yeah, they should be fine. I know, like, say, Damien Delaney was sitting in this seat a few weeks ago where he was talking about the pre-Fabinho days where Palace would target that gap where Fabinho now sits when Henderson was there. But they have other options. Like, even the Man City game, Wijnaldum was actually sitting deep beside Fabinho.
Yeah, yeah.
He can flit into that role.
Absolutely.
They should be fine against Brighton. I wouldn't be worried about that. Obviously, the derby, I know Everton are out of form, but we don't know if Marco Silva is still going to be in. Job by then, or what the situation will be. That's always a bit of a wild card, even though, again, Everton's record against Liverpool of late hasn't been good. But without Fabinho, maybe in those two games, I think they should be okay. You'd worry maybe in a game against a team that's closer to them, not points-wise, because nobody is close to them at the moment, but in terms of talent and everything else.
Also as well, then, this is it now. This is the start of the really busy schedule for them, where they've got the derby coming up. They'll be playing Leicester just after Christmas. They have the club championship as well, where they're going to have to go over to that. And I think the other night showed that as good as Liverpool's results have been, sometimes things can happen throughout a season. Fabinho goes off injured. As I said, Van Dijk was down for a few minutes, and that just kind of shows that you do need a little bit of luck in terms of injuries. We mentioned City. Like, City lost Laporte and Sané for a large chunk of this season. So Liverpool have been fortunate in that situation. But this actually probably is a nice game for them.
It is, and especially after a week off Champions League football, and it was a difficult night they had.
Yeah.
You want to play a team like Brighton who are going to play into your hands. Like, Brighton, for all the good play that they do play, they're not conservative against the bigger teams. They just go out and play the same manner of football, same attacking football, and that plays into the bigger teams' hands. And you'd worry about Liverpool putting up a big scoreline against them this weekend.
Yeah, they could certainly do it, couldn't they?
Should they hit the heights that this Liverpool team can, which they haven't really.
No.
They've been getting results, but they haven't really been blowing teams away this year.
No.
And often that's a sign of a better team. If you look at the City team from a couple of years ago before they won the league, the following year they were scraping by results, 2-0s, 2-1s at the end of the season, but they were still getting those results.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this Liverpool side are now as well. They were blowing teams away last year. They've kind of reined it in a little bit, and they can manage a game more, so they're not going all gung-ho. So I would say Liverpool win this handy enough, and it is a good game to get.
Yeah, it's funny though that people think Liverpool aren't playing well, they're getting results, but they did this last season as well, where Klopp has evolved season on season, where, you know, he comes over to the Premier League, obviously he wants his players to play high intensity, he realises, okay, I don't have a winter break, and you know, there's a lot more competitive games I have to worry about. So, you know, he tweaks it, and gradually they're still pressing, but they have moments in games where they kind of take their foot off the gas and they sit in and they play on the counter attack.
Yeah. Well, they are playing great football.
Yeah.
Like, it's some of the most scintillating football you'll see in the world at the minute. Some of the link up play between Firmino and Mane and Salah is brilliant. But like you're saying, they are managing games more, and that's probably what's going to bring them further in the progression to try win this league.
You'd imagine Trent Alexander-Arnold goes back in as well, Raf.
Yeah.
Strange choice, I thought. whatever about leaving him out? Because, look, there is a busy schedule coming up. We don't know what his energy levels were like. They're monitored by the team's medics. So maybe Klopp could have been told you could deal with taking Alexander-Arnold out of the team. Didn't have his greatest game last week against Palace. Maybe Klopp is thinking he'll take him out. But the problem is replacing him with Gomez, who
doesn't have that ability to whip in a ball in the same way.
I thought even, you know, Milner, even Henderson would do a job there for you, where they get into the final third, they can put it in a cross. But it just seemed to set things up nicely. Napoli were well able to defend it.
Yeah, and the other thing as well, just in terms of the pressing and that same point as well, Liverpool and I think Klopp likes having a very small, tight squad. So from time to time, he will have to rotate some of those names and maybe not in the front three as much. I know Origi's an option, but whenever he's come in, it just seems to imbalance the team. But if he can switch full-backs now and again, now Robertson's played every minute so far in the Premier League, so they don't have an option there. But at right-back, at least, they can.
OK, so I know we're kind of getting towards the end here, so we're going to look through some of the fixtures. Tottenham and Bournemouth, two wins from two for Mourinho, and you know, Mourinho sometimes accused of being pragmatic and boring. Seven goals in two games they've scored. Worryingly, though, they've conceded four, which is not really something you associate with Mourinho. Well, when he was in his prime, anyway, as a manager.
Well, he'll probably start to rein that in longer his career at Tottenham goes on. I was just actually on this page where it's updates on Unai Emery's sacking. Eddie Howe saying today that he doesn't want to be told that his team isn't playing well by his piano teacher. So he's obviously not pleased with the way results have been going this year, or at least his piano player or piano teacher isn't happy with the way his team has been playing this year. Bournemouth haven't hit the heights that they have in the last couple of years. They're always an inconsistent side. They've spent a lot of money as well over the last couple of years, so they just haven't really kicked on to the level that we might expect them. Tottenham at home, Mourinho, manager bounce, and just the way that they've been playing, they look like they're actually they're not going to give up like they were under Pochettino the last couple of days or last couple of weeks. So
everyone's clued in. The ball boys are playing a part. It's all good. You kind of had this sense, even when Mourinho was appointed last week, you looked at the fixtures, you thought, okay, they've got a trip to Old Trafford coming up. You thought they'll go there with three wins from three, and that's probably the way it's going to play out. And then we'll know more next week when they go to Old Trafford.
Yeah, more than likely. Like, he set up a stall so far. It's been kind of consistent enough in terms of team selection, and he's given a bit of freedom to the quartet that are kind of heading the at the top end of the pitch, and kind of the same back four. I'm just interested in what he'll do with the full backs, because I remember obviously the likes of Ivanovic would be his type of big hulking kind of centre back who's able to play full back, and I think that's probably the I'm sure they have options like Eric Dier could possibly flit into that role, although I'm sure he's at the moment anyway he's playing him kind of holding midfield, but
for half an hour.
But because I can't imagine Serge Aurier being reliable enough in Mourinho's eyes.
No, I wonder, are we going to see Sissoko there at some stage?
We could. I think Sissoko seems to be a kind of Mourinho player in the sense of physical, strong, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. Chelsea, West Ham, and you've seen the man himself play in goal, Roberto. You saw him there. How bad is he in person to watch?
He's just terrible. He doesn't. There's no other word about it. He just doesn't.
It's terrible, too small a word. Yeah,
terrible. It's an awful strong word. No, he's bad. He doesn't command the defence. He doesn't communicate with the wing backs to get into position, and that's their main issue this year. Or the last couple of weeks, he could potentially be the reason that Manuel Pellegrini gets the sack.
And made Fabianski seem like he's a world-class goalkeeper as well, even though he's done well for West Ham.
So, do you play David Martin?
No.
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know much about David Martin, but I'd imagine without seeing him play, he can't be as bad as Roberto.
Well, if you're Pellegrini, do you know if you're getting the sack anyway?
Yeah, well,
it doesn't matter. I think regardless of how this game goes, Pellegrini's gone.
Yeah, well, it's a tough game anyway, away to Chelsea. Yeah. The only thing, Raf, Tammy Abraham, that could be real bad news for Chelsea. We don't know how long he's out for. Didn't look great, though.
Yeah, and he's been in brilliant form. Even that first game against when they were trashed by Man United, hit the post, and you kind of knew once he scored a goal, he'd go on a run. Now, Michy Batshuayi gets the opportunity now.
So you would play Batshuayi instead of Giroud?
I think so, yeah. He seems to be second in line. I think Giroud seems to be almost out the door in some ways from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, Okay. Some of the other games then. Mention the games that are going to be coming up on News Talk on Sunday. You've got Wolves, Sheffield United, Stephen Doyle and David Myler on duty there at Molyneux, 2 o'clock kickoff. The battle end of the Irish fullbacks are going to be on the same, well, their wingbacks. Matt Doherty up against Enda Stevens. That'll be one to watch.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if Matt Doherty starts, because he did start last night, got a goal as well. So he's back into the team,
yeah,
playing very well.
With Traore in the team, yeah, as well.
So it's going to be an interesting one. Stephen Doyle's going to that. He criticised me for saying it's not going to be a very exciting game. I don't think it's going to be a very exciting game. It'll be a good game.
Be a very tactical game.
Yeah. It'll be two very well-drilled sides.
Yeah, but two very decent teams as well. The other game you'll be able to hear on Off the Ball on Sunday, Dave McIntyre and Brian Kerr are at the King Power Stadium. Leicester City and Everton, 4:30 kickoff. Brendan Rodgers, Leicester, flying high. Little bit of an injury worry. Johnny Evans came off. Wes Morgan replaced him. That would be something for Rodgers to cope with. See, could he cope with it with Wes Morgan?
Yeah, but at the same time, it's coming up against an Everton attack that aren't producing. Moyes Keane has flattered to deceive so far. I haven't really seen too much of him.
No.
And actually, Everton really haven't up front ever since Lukaku left a few seasons ago. They've never really pushed on in that area of the field. Leicester are flying, and the way things are going for Silva, I think I can only see it going one way, and probably better for the Everton players if the inevitable happens and they do lose and they do a kind of Arsenal and move on to whatever is next in terms of new manager, etc.
Just last word on fixtures. Manchester United, Aston Villa, that's also 4:30 on Sunday. United, obviously, you can't read much into what they did against Astana. All the kids, even like young Jesse Lingard didn't look so young yesterday with all the kids playing.
The slightly older kids are going to come on and take the field this weekend. Aston Villa, very good side. They're a very, very good side, especially with Jack Grealish in the midfield. They look dangerous and they could cause United all sorts of trouble.
Yeah, that's at 4:30. So before we go, what odds, Paddy? Right, here's one for you. Jose Mourinho to reference the Amazon movie post-match. So to say the word Amazon, 16-1. What do you reckon, Raf? We know that he wanted to get mic'd up last week, but Michael Oliver told him you can't be mic'd up in the referee's room before the game.
Yeah, no, and to hear a story as well that Amazon wanted to install like 80,000 worth of cameras, whereas Pochettino wanted the exact same priced cameras, and he was told no.
Yeah.
And that didn't obviously push him out the door. Obviously, results did, but Mourinho loves the cameras,
yeah,
and loves the attention.
Well, David Moyes to be back in management by the end of the week, 3-1. What do you think, Enda?
Well, he was favoured to replace Pellegrini at West Ham last week. So if Pellegrini goes or Marco Silva goes,
yeah,
I would say David Moyes will be getting a phone call from either one of those clubs.
We actually had one lined up. It was meant to be Marco Silva, Manuel Pellegrini, Unai Emery, all to survive the sack this weekend to be in their jobs on Monday morning with 6-4. That's obviously gone now because Unai Emery is gone. And to be honest, I don't know if Silva or Pellegrini will be in a job come Sunday evening, because obviously Leicester play Everton on Sunday. That is our lot. That is our Paddy Power half hour. And thanks very much to Raf and Enda. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll be back next week. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
The Paddy Power half hour on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.